afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Wednesday, June 7th, 2017. Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a little bit. Oh, I forgot to say hi, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oops. Hi, Al. Wendy Wilson will be joining us here in just a few moments, right after the market report. We have lots of things to talk about afterwards. GE is closing a plant in Wisconsin. South Korea is saying no to the U.S. And Bernanke says no matter what you do, don't let those big banks fall. And he's referencing to the decline of Wall Street. So there's a ton of things to talk about today. First, let's get to the gold prices. We had a little bit of just a slight pullback today, nothing to get alarmed about. Gold down $8 today at $1,286. You have silver down 13 cents at $17.65. Platinum was down 17. That took the big whack, $947. Palladium was down huge, 2.5%, down 22. At 831. So, considering those white metals, particularly platinum and palladium, gold not so bad, down 8 at 1286. Good day for gold, even though it's down. USDX today was up 0.18 at 96.72, and we have crude oil took a beating today, down 2.39 at 45.80. And the paper markets today, oh, of course, they're positive. The Dow was up 37 points at 21,173. The NASDAQ up 22 at 6,297. The S&P is up 4 points at 2,433. 10-year yield up a little bit. It's 2.18%. And, of course, there is pressure on the euro. 0.17 at 1.13. We'll have to see what tomorrow's election brings out of Europe, whether it'll just affect all currencies or just the pound, depending on who wins the election over there. And it'll also determine a lot whether they go through with Brexit or not. I've heard chatter that if May doesn't get elected, there's possibility that they're going to try once again to pull out of the Brexit. So we'll see what happens there. And Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about the next generation of antibiotics that science is creating. Because due to the deadly effect that the antibiotic-resistant bacteria have, scientists have been working for the next generation of antibiotics, and researchers at Squibb Research Institute in California have been kind of tinkering with the old pharmaceutical antibiotics in an attempt to help them kill the deadly bacterium. And most of the deadly bacteria we're talking about are floating around in hospitals, so you pick them up there most of the time. Now, one of the antibiotics that they're tinkering with is vancomycin. If you know anything about this drug, it tends to be medicine's last use of antibiotic when other drugs have failed to clear a bacterial infection. So vancomycin has tend to be pretty potent, pretty strong, and doctors would hold off using it because of that. Now, it was developed in 1953 by Eli Lilly Pharmaceuticals, and they made it from bacteria that they harvested from the jungles of Borneo. Now, at the time that they were making the vancomycin, bacteria was already resistant to penicillin within just 5 years of its debut. So in 1975, the use of vancomycin was steadily increasing. And by 1980, scientists have started to see bacterial strains being resistant to even the vancomycin. So the side effects of vancomycin can be severe. And it offers the usual digestive discomforts and yeast infections, but most antibiotics do. But it also sometimes has some side effects that are very serious, like kidney damage, liver damage, hearing loss, blood disorders, bone marrow disorders, low blood pressure, toxic skin reactions, anaphylactic shock, super infections, which they say are secondary and of unknown origin, and also blood poisoning called sepsis. So it's kind of scary that they're re-engineering vancomycin, to be honest. Now, in the 40s, medicine boasted they had overcome deadly bacteria with the debut of penicillin, yet here we are today with bacteria so resistant and so deadly that science is upping the stakes. So what scientists have done is take the vancomycin, and they've made it 1,000 times more potent. Now, doesn't that give you pause for concern? Anybody?
It does me.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if we've been getting along with one level of potency, and now they're doing 1,000 times that?
Right, right, right. Well, and the research team describes this work with re-engineering vancomycin as, quote, an elegant synthesis of chemistry. That's what they think of themselves. So the scientists have adjusted vancomycin's properties to be able to once again bind to a bacterial wall and prevent it from multiplying. However, this time the scientists seem to have built into this drug a few safeguards to try to prevent a resistance. So they've changed the drug's molecule, offering more than one way for the drug to kill a bacteria. So this makes it more difficult for the bacteria to establish a resistance. So scientists claim that their new drug has a bacterial resistance built into it, and they've exposed bacteria to it 50 times, and so far there's been no bacterial mutation to resist it. But I think that's a very low number, to be honest, just a 50-time exposure.
I agree. They're going to deal with millions, potentially. I mean, billions, maybe. Just in one person. And if one of them breaks through and survives.
Well, they think that's going to be unlikely, because with the new vancomycin, bacteria, they say, would need to learn 3 ways to resist the drug, and science thinks that's highly unlikely. Okay? So, currently the drug is not mass-produced, so the next phase of the research is to make synthetic bunches of it, if you would, large doses, put it out there. They call these re-engineered antibiotics new mechanisms. That's how they're referring to them. So the research was published in the Journal of the American Chemical Society, and it kind of sounds like, it may be a scientific approach that's plausible, could have the hallmarks of success. Of course, if the research isn't junk science, right, Al?
Well, let's hope not.
Yeah. Well, in the research for this segment, I came across some other studies because, after 70 years of antibiotic use, we can look back, we can look outside and see that our bodies have seen this ripple effect of antibiotic use. So scientists are stating that even pollinating bees are affected when we use these types of drugs. So in 2013, the Wyss Institute of Biology, their inspired engineering department at Harvard, discovered that long-term use of antibiotics creates great stress on living things. So the researchers looked at human cell mitochondria, and they found that our cells, when it's exposed to antibiotics, it actually shortens the mitochondria as if it was experiencing oxidative stress. And stress of this nature tends to damage the DNA and make us more vulnerable to disease later. So, of course, science has, a solution. Doctors say, hey, just take antioxidants. What do you think of that?
Well, it sounds like they've reached a point where they're recommending vitamins. And I'm much surprised to take antioxidants.
The thing is, that's not really going to help much, because once the oxidative stress is occurring, the damage is already being done. Okay, so another fact that the scientists discovered is that we're more at risk of illness from antibiotic therapy if we take the drugs for longer than 4 days. Dr. Catherine Spina of the Boston University, who was working with the Wyss Institute, stated that when patients take antibiotics for more than 4 days, it causes the mitochondria to malfunction, and malfunction leads to disease. So, I mean, how many times has your doctor said, finish the 10-day course of antibiotics, right?
I understand.
Right?
What about genetic damage?
Well, that's what DNA is.
Well, I understand, but what I'm asking is, if you're taking antibiotics, especially these new and improved super antibiotics they're talking about, mm-hmm. If is it likely to cause genetic damage if you're in the process of the child is in the womb?
Oh, I would think so. I think, yeah. I think that passes through, you know, the barrier to the baby. Absolutely. I mean, everything that you put in the body is going to have an effect. And that's why they didn't want to vaccinate women when they were pregnant. They had no idea what the vaccine would do, and now they're recommending vaccines to pregnant women. So, they have no idea what it's going to do. They've never tested these vaccines for pregnancy. Well, here's another thing. There was another study in 08, the American Gastroenterology Department. They found a large class of drugs, these antibiotics, they contain these agents that cause drug-induced liver damage. So according to their findings, antibiotics that are also followed by acetaminophen-type products, which are the number one cause also of acute liver damage. And how many times are you combining those two?
I'm not combining them at all.
Well, I know, but people do. They'll go home and
I
take,
know.
you know, stuff for fever, and then they'll take their antibiotics. And this causes a hepatotoxic agent compound for the liver. It overwhelms the liver. Now, an antibiotic that's 1,000 times more potent, that's been tested 50 times, is insufficient in retrospect that antibiotics are going to be used a minimum of 50,000 times each year in the United States. A minimum.
You're talking about one of these super antibiotics is going to be used a minimum of 50,000
Right.
times in the United States. I
Right.
understand. Yeah.
Yeah,
And
so
when we
it's.
say 50,000 times, we don't mean 50,000, we mean 50,000 individuals who are going to take this for a period of 4 days, which means they're going to get a dose or two every day for 4 days, which is eight times, which translates into something like 400,000 doses of this stuff will be passed out. And I'm only guessing it might be more than that. And we're betting that none of the little bacteria will be sneaky and slide through the
Well, they're saying that the vancomycin that's been re-engineered can kill the bacteria in three separate ways. Used to be that antibiotics were very simple. They weren't very complex in their action. They would bind to the gram-negative bacteria cell wall and prevent it from multiplying and then kill it. And that's how you got over an infection. Then what happened is the bacteria mutated and it changed its outer wall so that the antibiotic couldn't bind to it anymore. So that's why it was ineffective. So now they've changed the mechanism in the antibiotics so that not only if the wall changes, there's two other ways that the antibiotic can seem to subjugate the bacteria. So they're saying the bacteria has to figure out three ways of mutating to defeat this drug.
I understand, and it actually sounds like a brilliant idea. And we'll watch and see if it really works. But it is a change in technology. It's not just a question of more horsepower, essentially. They're doing something here. We'll watch and see if this actually works or not.
Well, and the thing is it only took bacteria's 4 years to be resistant to penicillin and most of your simple antibiotics. We'll see how long it takes with the complex ones. Because, you
It'll
know,
take
back.
us 6 years and it'll be a 50% improvement.
I
Yay, yay.
don't know. Yeah, that's pretty much how they'll look at it, I suppose. You know, it's.
And we'll need
I don't
one
know.
for 10,000 instead
I
of
don't
a
know. Just.
thousand times stronger. It'll be 10,000 times stronger.
I know, but at this point, it's sort of like, you know, when they claimed, you know, penicillin, we've defeated bacteria, we will no more have bacterial infections, and they were just, you know, patting themselves on the back. It's sort of like the people at the White Star that said, "Hey, we've developed this unsinkable ship called the Titanic." You know, so I just
No, I
can't.
understand.
I just think God's sitting on his throne laughing at that. But we got a few minutes. I just want to mention we can go into more depth the next time. But did you know Congress has passed a law in December of 2016 that allows pharmaceutical companies to test vaccines on the public without prior consent?
Yep, I wasn't exactly aware of that, but I'm not the least bit surprised.
It's called the 21st Century's Cures Act. And what was really astonishing is the language in the law. States if the drug, device, or vaccine does not pose more than a minimal health risk, they can test. So
who's to say before they test? How do we know whether it's a minimal health risk or a maximal health risk until they test it?
Well,
they're essentially saying we can use the people like lab rats.
Right. Well, what's in, also in the law is it reduces the quality standards of evidence that the drug company has to submit to the FDA. And the law also suggests that informed consent is not feasible. So, and where they're going, they're going to use this is, you know, they're going to use this for the aerial spraying of vaccines. They can actually, for $1 per dose, vaccinate you without your consent.
Aerial?
Yes.
And they're going to vaccinate us, and presumably they're going to vaccinate all the birds and the fish and the horses and the cows.
Well, that's the...
The universal vaccine.
See, that's the logistic problem. You know, same dose for adults, children, pets. There's a risk of duplicating your exposure that way. There's no informed consent. There's no documentation of a vaccine. And there's plausible deniability if there's adverse events because there's no cause and effect diagnosis because there's nothing to say you were vaccinated. And
yeah,
you know,
how would you even prove? How do you charge? I've been damaged. I'm ill. I've got whatever disease. I've got whatever disability. And I say it happened. And they say, how do you prove that it came out of the airplane and you got some?
Well, it's not so much airplanes. Actually, MIT is developing drones for this.
Oh, good. Drones.
Yep. So, but, you know, we do have U.S. Congress and the Supreme Court that have gone on record to say vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. Oh, well, basically. Yeah. And, but, you know, Robert Moxley, he's a attorney. He said he understands this also. He says when you go against the herd immunity, it's not tolerated because in the vaccine industry, there's no such thing as vaccine injury. So that's why it's difficult. Plus, you know, that vaccine court, they've amended the law so many times, they make it totally almost impossible for people to comply and to get compensated. So,
yep.
So we got issues. But, you know, hey, the good news is we got herbs, too. God's herbs are here for the service of man and the healing of the nations, and God can't lie. So I'm going to go with that.
So where can we get some of those herbs?
Absolutely. They give us a call. We have our Father's Day special that started. So 20% off on orders of $50 or more through the 18th. And they can call 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Or visit us at thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. Look forward to talking to you again on next Wednesday. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Give her a call. We'll take a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I mentioned that we wanted to talk about the GE closing a plant and Paul Ryan's home state of Wisconsin. And I believe they're going to be losing about 350 jobs. And it's a big blow for this town. And guess where they're moving to, Al?
Mexico?
Nope. Canada.
Puerto Rico?
Canada. The Canadian government gave GE $2 billion in incentives to shut down in Wisconsin and move to a city in Ontario, Canada. The people in that town, GE has provided some of the higher-paying manufacturing jobs. The city is Waukesha, and people get paid $30 an hour. GE leaves; they're not going to be able to replace those wages. You know, they're going to go from $30 an hour to $15 an hour, and it's upset a lot of the people because now they're beginning to look to Donald Trump, because these people who normally would have been voting the other side voted for Mr. Trump with his promises that if companies leave, that they would pay a hefty tax on the items that come back into the country, perhaps a 35% tax, and punish those businesses. And that's what they were. A lot of the employees would like to see GE first on that list. But then you have to remember that the GE CEO, Jim Immelt, is a member of President Trump's Manufacturing Advisory Council. So there's a lot who voted for Trump were baffled that the president gave Immelt such a prominent role. But so now we'll have to see. The people haven't given up on Mr. Trump yet. So they're still grading him a B, and they do believe that Trump cares about the average person. I never believed that, but you know, I think Trump cares. I'm just not sure about what. And you know, in some degrees, I think he cares about this country. I think he's seen the changes, but there isn't anything that supports that anymore. That's the problem. But we'll see. But that is certainly a major blow. And I think, too, with all the discussion of NAFTA, renegotiating NAFTA, and I'm sure that Canada just didn't offer GE $2 billion this month. I'm sure it's been in the process for a while, probably, you know, even before the election and so forth. The little details were worked out. But perhaps things are moving a little faster with the idea that NAFTA will be renegotiated, and businesses are positioning themselves to do what they need to do before that gets done. Don't know. That's just my, you know, thoughts.
Well, one of the questions is, where does GE sell the products that it's manufacturing and it's been manufacturing in Wisconsin? Are they sold primarily into the United States market, or are they sold into the Canadian market? It may be that they could move their, if they're selling into Canada in the first place, it may be by crossing the line they don't have to pay the taxes that Canada would impose on importing their products into Canada.
Well, what was built at the factory was engines that were used in the petroleum industry. So, yeah, your mom and pop aren't going to be using those products. So it's going to be big business, the oil industry, that buys these engines. So.
Move down to Texas. Or maybe even the Dakotas.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Some place where they need oil engines.
Well, also today, President Trump announced that he selected the former federal prosecutor, Christopher Wray, to replace Comey. He will be the new FBI director. And he's a seasoned criminal lawyer. And he played a pivotal role in the aftermath of 9/11, providing oversight of operations of terrorism. He was also head of the criminal division from 2003 to 2005. He directed efforts to deal with fraud scandals plaguing the corporate world. So I'm not sure this is the right guy. He was also Chris Christie's personal attorney. And we all know that Christie avoided jail time over the Bridgegate scandal. So it's interesting, the timing, the person. He's, I read something into everything. I just can't, I always read between the lines, folks, and that's where you get to the truth. And so, the timing is suspect, just like the firing of Comey. And I was thinking, if he never fired Comey, none of this would be going on. If he would have just kept Comey in his position for 6 months.
Now, he could have fired Comey. He just could not ask Comey to back off on the... And this is where it gets peculiar.
No, my thought is if he didn't fire Comey when he did, this would all... In 6 months, all this would be blown... I mean, we wouldn't be having the hearings tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Would we?
Not for Comey. But the hearings are not about the firing, per se. They're primarily about whether he asked Comey to pull in his horns relative to the Flynn investigation. And there's a real question here whether, did the president order Comey? As president says, I'm the boss and you'll do what I say, and I'm ordering you to stop this investigation. All right, that's obstruction of justice. But what if he was just sitting around shooting the breeze with Comey and he said, I'd sure be,
nice.
Any chance that this thing might just
go
this,
away?
This Flynn investigation might just go away? Now, there's a difference between whether you are ordering something and you're just making an inquiry, right? And there's a language question in here, and I don't know that we're going to resolve it one way or the other, because so far as I know, the critical meeting between Comey and Trump took place where no one else was in the room. So we have no third-party witnesses to what actually was said. All right, so we have a potential where it's he said, she said. Comey says one thing and Trump says another. Who do you believe? And is one witness sufficient evidence to prove a contention in court?
Is it going to come down to what is the definition of is?
Yeah, all with the definition. It all depends on what the definition of is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think what we're going to see here is there's at least a good probability that Trump will go through the impeachment process.
I think so. They're not going to get
But I doubt that he's going to be impeached, yeah. In the sense that I doubt that he'll be found guilty, if only for political reasons. I believe this has to take place, the impeachment process has to take place in front of the House of Representatives, if I understand correctly. And then in order to find him guilty, I believe they have to have 51% of the people in the House of Representatives have to vote, hang him.
Well, Clinton
was
impeached. I
don't know if they can do that or not.
Clinton was impeached, and he kept his position.
No. When they say impeached, they mean found guilty.
He was found guilty, but he was
still
there.
It's not enough to be tried for impeachment. It's you've got to be found guilty to be impeached under these circumstances. And Clinton was not found guilty in the impeachment process. He went through the process, but he didn't. But he got out. He beat the rap.
He was legally impeached, but they didn't disband his position. He was still able to carry on his position, but he was tried.
He was tried.
He was tried and impeached.
But he wasn't found guilty. My understanding, impeached actually means that you're found guilty, not just going through the process. People confuse the two. Maybe I've got it confused, but my understanding is to be impeached is, in fact, to be found guilty of some offense that's worthy of causing you to be removed from office,
right,
and then you
right.
are removed. You're
that.
Removed, you're impeached. Found guilty, removed. Tried? You know, this is presumably innocent until found guilty.
So Mr. Trump's choice pick of Mr. Ray to replace Comey, and as being a personal attorney to Chris Christie and helped Christie avoid jail time, it seems like Mr. Trump is surrounding him once again, surrounding himself with, you know, more attorneys to keep him out of hot water, perhaps. And what's also interesting is this a preview of Christie's return as Attorney General? I mean, it was just this morning I heard there was discussions that Sessions had made a comment that he would resign if he needed to. So I'm thinking to myself, all of this happening, I mean, it really is, it is becoming a kind of a soap opera. Does it mean anything? Well, we'll find out.
I think it means a lot.
Pardon?
I think it means a lot.
Oh,
for example,
I'm thinking there is no such thing as a coincidence.
Sessions volunteering to resign.
Yep.
It's evidence that people on the inside are losing confidence in Trump. And just say, well, look, if you want me to go, I'll go. You know, I don't want to, but if you insist, I'll leave. Got my bags all packed, you know. Be back home on the 4 o'clock flight. You just give me the word. I don't know.
So
it does not inspire confidence, and it suggests that Trump is in trouble.
So there's a lot of coincidences here, and for one that doesn't believe in coincidences, it's you might have one, but there's a lot of other ones. And we all know Chris Christie, look how he was treated, and he is still loyal to Mr. Trump. If Mr. Trump wants loyalty, Christie will give it to him.
That's a dangerous request, and what Melody's talking about, he allegedly, he asked Comey if he could expect his loyalty. Well, loyalty is an interesting concept, and I get it, but what loyalty is all about? Will you stand by somebody even when they're wrong? That's what loyalty is finally about. It doesn't take any loyalty to be standing with someone when they're right. In theory, we should all stand with somebody when they're right. Loyalty is about, will you stick with them even when they're wrong? And insofar as Trump is asking for loyalty, he wants to know, will you conceal things on my behalf? Will you stand with me even if I'm liable for some sort of an offense? And Comey, in my opinion, is correctly saying, nope. You know, you can expect my honesty, but don't expect my loyalty.
But Chris Christie would give him that loyalty whether he's right or wrong.
I understand that, and that's a criminal kind of, me, I look at it, and it's evidence of some kind of a criminal predisposition. Will you stand with me even when I make a big error? Big mistake.
And I think
still be loyal.
I think Trump is now going into defense mode.
Well, we'll find out more tomorrow.
Yeah.
He's got to, kind of. I mean,
well, yeah,
he must already be there.
But I mean, I think he's ramping it up. I think he's ramping it up. Today, South Korea's newly elected president, Moon Jae-in, he suspended the deployment of an American missile defense system. An apparent concession to China and a significant break with the United States on policy towards North Korea. There were comments to reporters from a senior official from the presidential house in Seoul said today that the two launchers of the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System that had been installed could remain, but that four launchers that had yet to deploy would not be set up. This is that missile defense system known as THAAD. And it has drawn sharp criticism from China. They view that the system's radar is a threat. Beijing has taken retaliatory economic measures against South Korea. And I remember talking about this on our program, Al, how they were curtailing the flow of tourists, and they were punishing South Korean companies in China. The new president during the campaign complained that the United States and the previous South Korean administration rushed to deploy THAAD before the election, and his decision to suspend the installation would strain the relationship with the White House. And I find this interesting because I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Let them do what they want. Pull our troops out of South Korea. That's the whole problem over there anyway. So bring our troops home, close our bases over there, and let them protect themselves.
Well, the whole thing is pretty volatile, unstable, and even a little irrational because China has given North Korea a hard time. They won't take their coal, at least for a while. They weren't, and they may still be doing that in order to try to induce North Korea to behave itself. And now South Korea is, in a sense, turning its back on the United States to some degree. They aren't going to have these missile defense systems, which ultimately were probably intended to protect Japan more so, and American bases on Japan more so than South Korea. So we've got who's on whose side right now. This is like a bar brawl in a Western town in a movie where everybody's just fighting anybody. Who's on whose side? Who's loyal? No, I'm not loyal to any. I'm just, punch anybody who gets close.
Well, Chinese likes to do these things. They'll go in. They're a communist country. Come on. Everybody forgets that. Mm-hmm. And, they go in, they stir up the stuff. But my question, we know that North Korea, the whole problem is we're in South Korea. So South Korea doesn't want our help. Let's get out of there. Let them fend for themselves. And then let China control the two nations. So,
if we weren't there to maintain the separation, they'd combine. Why? One way or another, there would be some sort of a recombination between North and South Korea in the same sense. East Germany and West Germany after World War II, ultimately they were reunited. This would be something, we wouldn't expect it to be something similar.
Yeah, so, let them ferret out. Move the FAD system to Japan. If that was there to protect Japan, give them the system. I don't know if they already have one, but... Curiouser and curiouser,
and, it used to be when we had the Cold War and the evil empire, Soviet Union, they were on one end, we were on the other end. All the nations of the world were either toward one end or toward the other end. You pretty much knew what was going on. But now we're in a situation where it is not absolutely clear who's doing what and for what reasons. What is motivating South Korea to turn its back on the United States? Is this some sort of against a potential war? Is it China?
Is it
economics? And when will they change again? The whole thing has become unstable, unpredictable, and in itself, that instability points into a dangerous direction. Let's take a commercial break. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems today
today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We have some Canadian maple leaves, 1 ounce Canadian maple leaves. They're actually really pretty coins. Maybe not so much with the queen on that side, but the leaf, the maple leaf, is just absolutely beautiful on their coins. It is 24 karat gold, and we have them. We're going to run a special for today only, $40 over spot. We have a limited supply, $40 over spot. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. The later listeners and in the early morning listeners, call me. If I can still do it in the morning, I will. If I have to make a minor adjustment, I might have to do that, because that's a really good price, $40 over spot. I have two things I want to talk about, and then I know Al has a couple of things. I mentioned Ben Bernanke has a plea for U.S. policymakers on behalf of his regulatory heirs. He says, keep big banks out of bankruptcy court in the event of a future Wall Street meltdown. That's the whole thing about this. He says bankruptcy court may be wrong place for banks to meet their maker. He said this yesterday at the Brookings Institute in Washington. He says, under circumstances like we had in 2008, he really doesn't see bankruptcy as being realistic. Of course not. Not in his view. Bernanke ran the central bank, of course, during the 2008 meltdown. He says, financial reforms put in place since then have granted regulators so-called orderly liquidation authority, allowing them to seize a teetering bank and execute a living will put together by the bank. So your big banks, and you know who I'm going to say, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, they've been submitting resolution plans for approval and incorporating feedback from regulators for years. So they get to execute a living will for their bank, for their pre-bankruptcy, Al. I mean, why don't you tell us how you want to liquidate, you know, when Wall Street melts down the next time. So it's not a matter of if it's going to melt.
He's not worried about it melting down in 2050.
No.
Or maybe the next century or something.
Absolutely not.
He is worried that there's a potential meltdown within a couple of years, and perhaps within a couple of quarters, that's looming on the horizon. And what he's saying, don't let the big banks file for bankruptcy. And to my mind, I think this reminds me of Greece. Greece wanted to file for bankruptcy. They've been prevented from filing for bankruptcy, and to me, it's the only sensible solution. File for bankruptcy. Get out from under the debt and start to rebuild your country and your economy. They won't let them file for bankruptcy in Greece, and right now they're saying don't let the big banks file for bankruptcy here. And I think the reason is if they file for bankruptcy, the debts are canceled. And we live in a debt-based monetary system. They cancel the debt. Same thing with Greece. Greece is being prevented from canceling its debt. They need those debts, those Greek bonds. They need whatever it is that big banks have been issuing. They need it as collateral in the banks that has been used on fractional reserve banking to lend perhaps nine times the face value, whatever bank collateral that existed. And the point I'm trying to make is if they've got $1 million in the vault, and they have to declare, and somebody's got to declare that this thing is no longer valid. The debt can't be paid. It's been gone through bankruptcy court. This debt instrument can't be paid. In theory, it could mean that they have to pull in. They have loaned nine times the face value. In theory, it's out to the public. If the bond in the bank is determined to be no longer valid, it's been discharged by the bankruptcy court,
they have to pull in nine times the face of the face value of that bond. If they loan nine times, they got to pull it back in, or at least that's the way it appears to me, which means the real devastation could be financially huge, right? It's not just a question of whether the bank files for bankruptcy. If it was only the bank, nobody'd care. But if the bank has been, Bank of America has been giving bonds to J.P. Morgan Chase, and J.P. Morgan Chase has been selling bonds to Bank of America, and they're holding on to each other's bonds, if they cancel any of these bonds, they're maybe going to have to pull out up to nine times. Now, I'm not convinced that's absolutely the truth, but it's probably, it may be close.
They probably couldn't file bankruptcy because of all the derivatives that these guys own and process.
I don't know what they could do, but bankruptcy cancels debt.
So
live in a debt-based monetary system, and if they cancel debt, they wipe out the correlative wealth.
The whole point is they were given laws so that they could liquidate on their own pace. And then the point is every little bank in this country will go belly up. They'll absorb, and the next thing you know, we'll have three or four national banks. Everything else will become nationalized, all your gold mines and everything else. I mean, that's the direction we're headed. And when it melts down, the whole point of also of this article was Wall Street is going to melt down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was doing some research today, and I was looking up Venezuela. And, that's another story, and we'll bring that tomorrow about their stock market and everything. But I just wanted to yesterday we did talk about cryptocurrencies, and my client an avid listener to the program, she sent the request that we talk about it. And I do thank you for sending the request. I encourage all of you to send me requests of topics that you would like discussed, because we will discuss them. I mean, and sometimes, you know, with like anything else, we might think a topic is important and, you know, we might miss yours. So please let me know. But she did send a very nice thank you for the valuable information on cryptocurrencies. She always knows she will get an honest answer and nothing sensationalized like so many of these people on the internet. So thank you, Valerie. She says she had no intention of buying Bitcoin, but was wondering what the mania was all about. After losing almost everything in the stock market in 2008, she said she will never gamble like that again. And she just listened to an interview with Greg Hunter and Andy Hoffman, and they were talking about how gold and silver, there's so little risk. And with cryptocurrencies, there's a ton of risk, major risk. And we're at a time, I believe, that you shouldn't be carrying major risk. And that's the beauty of gold and silver. There's so little downside. Well, I don't think there's any downside potential. Sure, a couple bucks here for gold, a couple cents here for silver, but you know, it's not going to 700 like Harry Dent calls. And now I always have to laugh. Whenever gold goes up, you never hear anything from Harry Dent. And just as soon as gold corrects by $5 or $10, all of a sudden you get all these new emails and everything saying, oh, you know, gold is going down. It's kind of funny, but I think he pretty much ruined his reputation. But anyway,
doesn't matter. You keep talking, you can resurrect your reputation, provided you don't hold up any severed heads. None of that. There's a few other things you can't do that are politically incorrect, but other than that, keep punching, and you can be back in the biz, Melody. Got an article here from Bloomberg, and Bill Gross. The headline is: Bill Gross says market risk is highest since before 2008 crisis. And this is along the lines of what you're talking about with a great market risk. It says, the article says, U.S. markets are at their highest risk levels since before the 2008 financial crisis, because investors are paying a high price for the chances they're taking. And this is according to Bill Gross, manager of the $2 billion Janus Henderson Global Unconstrained Bond Fund. All right. What does he mean when he says investors are paying a high price for the chances they're taking? And he says what he means by that is, instead of buying low and selling high, they're buying high and crossing their fingers. He's talking about today's investors. The Dow Jones is at record highs. If you're buying it, you are buying high
And we've told you, I don't know how many times on this program, it's not original with us, but if you want to make a profit, you buy low and you sell high.
That's funny.
That's how you make a profit in the markets. So that's what it boils down to. If you're going to buy low, you're going to buy it when nobody else wants it, which takes a lot of courage. If you're going to sell high, you're going to sell when everybody wants it. And that also takes a peculiar kind of courage because everybody's going to be predicting, no, it's not just going to 21,000 or it's going to 50,000 or 100,000 or whatever. And you've got to have enough common sense to sit back and say, no, I think I'm going to capture my profits now. I'm going to sell high. That's when everybody's grabbing all they can get. That's the time for the sensible people. And so what Gross is saying, instead of buying low and selling high, investors, today's investors, are buying high because they're at record highs, and they're crossing their fingers and hoping that this thing's going to go even higher. And that's what's been happening in our market. There is no fundamental reason for the markets to be at the levels, record high levels that they have right now. The economy's not that strong. You know, sales aren't that strong. There is no good fundamental reason for the markets to be as high. So he's saying risk is high, and your people are buying high, and it's a bad thing to do. Central bank policies for low and negative interest rates are artificially driving up asset prices. And what he means is because interest rates have been so low, people have been borrowing money from banks at low interest rates, or corporations have been borrowing money from banks at low interest rates and using it to buy stock. And as more and more of them buy stock, they're pushing the price higher, even though the fundamentals don't justify the stock market going higher. They're doing it because it's so cheap to borrow money. You might as well borrow it. They're practically giving it away. I can borrow money and go out and buy some gold. I can borrow money and go out and buy whatever. And people have been looking at that, and that, you know, whatever mentality has been pushing prices higher. So he's saying that negative interest rates, low interest rates, negative interest rates, artificially driving up asset prices while creating little growth in the real economy. No fundamental reason for this except the feds have cut the interest rates so low. That's what's driving the record highs. And you've got to sit back and say, well, how long can they maintain these record low interest rates? Because whenever they finally go back to reality, and they have to sooner or later, guess what? Stock market is going to go back to reality also, and maybe even below reality, at least initially. So Gross agrees with what you're saying, Melody, that there's a lot of risk running around here. And he's saying, look, watch your step.
Bill Gross was known as the Bond King when he worked for PIMCO. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while he comes out and, you know, he has some good things to say, and he kind of was, you know, made fun of because he talked about the bond market being in a bubble and everything. But he did impress me when not too long ago when they took the last rate increase, when that 10-year yield got to 2.6%, 2.60%. And he says they can't let it go up. They can't close above that for any length of time. And he says that will destroy the markets. And sure enough, they cut rates, and look where we're at today on that 10-year yield. So that is an important level. And, he was one of the few that I read about that really spotted that and called the 2.60. And so he did impress me at that point in time. So he does know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. He was known as the Bond King. And Absolutely. And what happens when these multinational corporations the rates go high? If they raise rates again, how high do those rates go before they can't borrow enough debt anymore to buy their shares? You know, so the rise
begin to go the other way.
Yeah, and all that money being repatriated back, the $2 trillion that everybody's talking about, a lot of that's going to go either to buy back their shares to keep them from falling either further or paying off the debt that they borrowed. So
yeah, that's the other problem.
And the only and they're talking about great earnings, all these multinational corporations had all these great earnings. Hello, the dollar fell. That's what helped them. That's what helped them show a little better earnings this time around. It wasn't people out there buying things. It wasn't based on fundamentals of a strong economy here or around the world. You know, it's the curtain is becoming a little more, you can see through the curtain, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They used to be able to, it's like a magician's act on, you know, America's Got Talent. All right. It's hard to figure out what this guy's doing, at least initially. But as you start stripping away the cloaks and whatever else they have up there, all of a sudden, oh, I see what he's doing. There's just a trap door in the back here. It wasn't really magic, was it? There's a trap door. Now we can see. Our economy is a little like that. The economists and the Federal Reserve and the government have been able to be the little man behind the curtain for a considerable period of time, and nobody has seen them. Nobody's noticed them, really, or at least not many people have. And now we really are paying no attention to that little man behind the curtain. We're seeing the little man behind the curtain, and we're beginning to understand this isn't magic. This is manipulation, and there's a difference, right? This is illusion. This is deception. This is accounting gimmicks. This is a bunch of things that will not stand the test of time. Now, how much longer can they last? Nobody knows. But it does look as if we are getting closer and closer and closer to an end where they finally have to admit, we're not really magicians. We're just hustlers and con artists, and we've tried to hold this racket together as long as we could, and now it's going to fall apart. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.